On today's episode of Acadiana Cast Presents, we have the great, hilarious, and powerful DJ Rhett. If you live in South Louisiana, if you love South Louisiana culture and you're on social media, you've more than likely seen one of his videos over the few years. He's getting into stand-up comedy now and is going to be on the Cajun Comic Relief Show coming up on March 9th. We're going to talk about that show a little bit. Also, you know, kind of his journey through this this media production that he's been doing, being from the oil field now to making sillies on the internet. It's a great story. He's a great, fun guy to talk to. I'm really excited about this conversation. Before that, I just mentioned Cajun Comic Relief. Guys, it's going to be the show of the year here in Acadiana. I've got an exciting invitation for you this year. This year's Cajun Comic Relief's 33rd annual show. It's been going on for over 33 years. It's incredible. I think there was a break during COVID, but just the longevity is amazing. This year, we're lighting up the Hyman Center with a comedy lineup like no other, featuring DJ Rhett, JP Leonard, who is hosting with Lafayette Comedy, AJ Smith, Murray Conk, and Blake Hebert. As a proud Acadiana advocate, I'm thrilled to share that this year's Laughter Fest is not just about bringing joy. It's a powerful movement to support love of people's fight against Parkinson's and dementia. Every ticket you purchase helps us get one step closer to making a difference in the lives of those affected by these conditions. It's an underserved population here in Acadiana and South Louisiana as a whole. So having services that can help these people is massive, and Cajun Comic Relief is one of the biggest events that we have to help for that this year. Join us to laugh till it helps by celebrating our rich Cajun culture and contributing to a cause that touches many hearts. Get your tickets today by visiting CajunComicRelief.org. That's CajunComicRelief.org. All right, hit the music. Do you know that song, Tinana?
Oh, how can you not? I've DJ'd for years, and that's like the number one song down the bayou.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Lee Allen Zeno with Buckwheat Zydeco. He's a bass player with the Blue Monday All-Stars, which I don't know if you know what the Blue Monday mission is. Mm. It's one of Love of People's, one of their another initiatives where it started as a way to give back to the aging musician population. A lot of these old Zydeco Cajun cats, you know, they went on the road at an early age, didn't know a damn thing about saving money or treating their music like a business. And so when they get older, they got medical costs. It's harder for them to find stage time and you know, dip into the little funds that they had. So we created this Blue Monday jam to get these guys on stage, you know, give the kind of the older population of Lafayette a chance to go listen to Monday, listen to blues on a Monday, mm-hmm. While also empowering the kind of the next generation of musicians to, you know, not make the same mistakes that they did. And also just kind of recycling that culture that we love so much. But Lee Allen Zeno is the bass player for that house band, and he just won his second Grammy with Buckwheat Zydeco Jr.
Nice.
So father to son, full circle kind of thing.
He didn't get album of the year with Taylor Swift?
No, he just missed out on that one.
I was hoping that he would have told a spotlight from her.
We're going to get into all kind of Cajun culture, your comedy, your videos and whatnot. But real quick, what is your take on this whole Taylor Swift NFL phenomenon that's going on? Recording this like the weekend before the Super Bowl.
It's all put on. It's rigged.
Of course, you're a Saints fan. You got to say it's all rigged.
I wouldn't say it's rigged. I would say it's heavily influenced. You know what I'm talking about? Mm. Like kind of like you know, like the Globetrotters. Yeah, it's all put on wrestling. It's all put on, but they still have to make the moves and they still have to do that. Same with football. I think it's kind of got a narrative and a story. It just depends on which way the crowd wants it to go. Mm. You know, like when Rock came back, everybody's like, yeah, Rock, come back. And then now 2 weeks later, you took the dream away from Cody Rhodes, and now everybody's like, Rocky sucks. Rocky. So it's like you got to go with whatever the crowd says. You know what I'm saying? You got to drive it that way. So
I did see that since she's been going to Chiefs games, she's brought in about $360
million. Million, yeah. Of just indirect revenue to the NFL, like jersey sales, yeah. Just ticket sales.
I want to keep
like
her
that.
Around too.
Yes, but it's annoying, man. It's kind of, and that's what I tell. Like,
why? Because you see her on screen for 2 seconds.
And look, everybody's like, "Oh, yeah, you just got that man. I don't like seeing her." Blah blah. I'm like, no. Here's the thing: women like soap operas, right? Mm-hmm. What if I put Hulk Hogan and The Rock into soap operas? Well, they might like it. I don't know those lonely women. But what I'm saying is, if I would bring a thing of masculinity to something that's feminine, they'd lose their mind. So it's the same thing. It's like, I just want to watch football. And then I saw a statistic.
Well, they only showed Taylor Swift for 14 seconds. Everybody's going crazy.
But they talk about it a whole game. You know what I'm talking about? It's like, you can't get away from it. Like, one of the things that I noticed is, like, even the commentators, they are all into it. Like, Jim Nance, he's like, you know, Tony, ever since Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce came into the league, it's almost been a love story. And I'm like, bro, God, you know what I'm talking about? Like, they trying to use those. You try any way to squeeze it in there, you know?
I know what you're doing. You're just trying to piss off the Swifties to help your algorithm and get more people liking and watching your videos.
That's exactly what I'm trying to do, yeah. No, but it's funny because, I mean, it really doesn't bother me, but what I do, my brand of comedy, I call it stirring the pot. Mm. And people get really agitated, like, you know, tomatoes in the gumbo, potato salad on the side, Taylor Swift, you know. People have an opinion, and I love playing on that. You know what I'm saying? Yes. And eventually something cool might come out of their opinion. It might be a joke, a hidden joke in there, you know. And I try to look at both sides. And, you know, some people take it like, oh, man, he's really being serious. And other people say, that's just his persona. And that's exactly what it is. I have a take on everything. I have an old papa take, mm-hmm. you know. I'm getting up. I'm pushing 50. And a lot of people don't know that. I'm 46 years old. I'll be 47 in June.
You look great.
Yeah, well, thank you. And but, yeah, my mom and dad didn't look this good at 47. I'm just going to say it. They smoked a lot of cigarettes. So.
What was their cigarette of choice?
My dad was Winston Lights, and my mom was Virginia Slim Light 120s because I had to go buy them all the time. You know?
You probably hated to buy those Virginia Slims, didn't you?
Them suckers were, like, as big as a canoe like this, you know?
We had Barry Onsalay on the show last week, and I think it probably airs right before your episode, but... He was talking about, I was asking about Cajun comedy and the Cajun storytelling and whatnot, and he was saying, I was asking why people down here love it so much, and he said, well, a lot of the comedy and storytelling with the Cajun culture comes from, like, taking you down a peg, taking the wind out of the sails a little bit. No one is sacred, whether it's any sort of leadership, whether the powers that be, whether it's the government, the Pope, everyone can get it.
Oh, yeah.
And you kind of fall into that
philosophy. I stirred a pot. You know, it's just, and that's one of the things with social media. It's like you want engagement. You don't want just a set of eyes at it. You do, but you also want people to buy into what you're talking about. It's like food in a piranha tank. You throw it in there and they all come, and you just watch and you kind of just play the puppet on a string and just mitigate that some kind of way, you know? And then that's what I love to do. And then I'll pull jokes out of that. And then, you know, just being down to Bahia and being a DJ like I was growing up, just soaking up the music, soaking up the Louisiana culture. It just went into this sponge that I call a tet, and it just comes out the mouth, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, we'll just see what happens, you know? Because, I mean, I think the true meaning of comedy is just taking two opposite ends of the spectrum and putting them together and see what happens. Yeah. So, like, with my parodies, you know, we trawl down the bayou. That's what we do. We get on a shrimp boat, and we trawl. So I've DJed over the years. Free Fallin' was a great song, and one day I just said, we trawling one day, and then I said, let's go in the studio and do this, and we did it, and boom. It's got like 2 million views, and boom. Stuff happens, you know? And I think that's what comedy is. That's the brilliance of comedy. It just comes out of nowhere. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And, I mean, in my car, I got a pad. On the side of my desk, I got a pad. My phone is full of useless stuff. Like, I'll be on the road, and I'll just say something in my phone, and I'll go back to it later. Because if you don't write it down or you don't do it right there at that particular time, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's gone. So a lot of the parodies I write them within 10 to 15 minutes because I have that idea and I'm like, okay, it's just, I don't know what it is. Something that takes over me. I'll tell my wife, hey, look, give me 10, 15 minutes. I got to go to the studio right quick and do this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. And then about an hour later, I play it for her and she's like, Where did that come from? You know what I'm saying?
Right over here, bitch.
I don't know. I don't know where it came from, but it's fun. It's just fun. And it's fun doing that stuff, putting it out there and getting judged. Good, bad, indifferent, it doesn't matter because not everybody's going to like your stuff. And that just makes me want to get better for everybody, you know? And I used to let that dark hole of the social media, you know, the trolls, make me go down that dark hole and want to defend myself every time. But you'll be there all day long. And then I just decided to use that energy to create something and not go down the hate path. Just ignore the hate. They're hating because you're doing stuff something right. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
I love that. Like since I've started making content, I haven't done a good job of the engaging part.
Mm-hmm.
I've just posted, released, and then
see what happens.
And see what happens. Go on to my next thing.
Right.
I cared more about the consistency of putting stuff out rather than the feedback. But with this social media world that we live in, you need the engagement. You need to develop an audience. And
exactly.
The audience needs to feel like you're there with them. But I think it's that fear of just getting the brain stirring and circling around the negative comments.
Right.
That's kind of halted me from doing
it. It's human nature. I mean, look, everybody has an opinion. Everybody has an opinion. And you know what? I'm like, I'll put something out there and they're like, not funny. And I'm like, okay. And then, but 10 other people say that's funny. You know, so, but you'll read the one not funny and you'll be like, well, why is it not funny? When 10 other people told you it's funny, but you ignore that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like, you want to find out what's hurting that person to make them better, you know, to make them understand what you're going through. And then another thing, the whole cancel culture thing, I mean, it's like if somebody just gets on there and says, oh, well, I got a friend that's this and you made fun of that. And I'm like, okay, what kind of pathetic world you're living in to where, you know, these are jokes. I wouldn't literally go up to somebody that's either handicapped or of a different race or anything and really hate on them. You know what I'm saying? I think, and then we said this earlier before we went on air, I really think we're in a spot right now where people are like, they're choosing between like what's funny and what's not, but also feelings. Like, come on, man. It's like life is too short. Laugh at yourself, you know? One of the things I'm watching right now is Toby Keith. Look, Toby Keith, I used to like DJ with him. It's like a little less talk, a lot more action in the 90s. He started being more patriotic in the 2000s and stuff like that. Then he kind of fell off. And then I found out he had cancer. And then I just started watching like his last like 6 months. And he was just putting out a message that, same thing, like, he always used to dig into the negative stuff. And when he found out he had stomach cancer and he couldn't do nothing about it, he just tried to, like, he let go of everything. He had his faith. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to just put out what I feel. And I don't care what anybody says. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm on my way
out. So I do the same thing when I approach a comic thing. If somebody does get bent out of shape, which maybe happened once or twice, but you're going to have that in the comedy world. You just have a conversation with them off to the side and say, hey, this is what I was talking about, whatever. And then after about two beers, they're like, oh, okay, ha, ha, ha. You know, like, whatever. But yeah. I've never been heckled. Oh, I've been heckled once, but that was a drunk woman.
Yeah.
And I put her on my lap and pop, 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 and put her right back, and she never did it again.
There
so
you go.
Never heckle a good comedian because you will get burnt. Yeah, I'm just telling
I
you.
I heard, I'm a massive fan of stand-up comedy, and I heard one comic say that, like, it should be like 80% of the audience is laughing, 20% is appalled.
Right, right. It's strange. Like, stand-up comedy is strange because it's like you're going in a venue. You've paid to come in here to know you're going to get maybe offended or laugh at some stuff that you probably wouldn't laugh at. A comedy club is more of like a dark humor type place where you're preparing yourself to hear some really crazy stuff, you know? And if you're not prepared and you go in there and you pay money and you sit there and you're like, rah, 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 you know, it's like, you look like the idiot, not anybody else in here, you know? And, but I mean, like I said, I had a woman heckle me one time because she's like, ah, my husband's always, look at this DJ Rhett video. Look at this DJ Rhett video. Look at this DJ. He won't even screw me. He's watching your videos. And I was like, damn, you must suck in bed. You know, like, so I make a joke out of it, right. You know, like, so, and it's just at the end of the night when she saw my comedy routine, she, you know, she was like, you know what? I got a different perspective on it now. You know, you don't see me. You see me on Facebook snippets.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see the full me. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, you know, the Kevin Harts of the world, the Theo Vaughns, the, you know, you just see them on the stage. You never really have a conversation with them. That's why I like Theo Von watching his podcast, because you really see that guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's why I do podcasting too, like once a month. I don't know how often you do this podcast.
Once a week.
Once a week, yeah. So I mean, the cool thing about podcasts is you really get to know, strip down all the BS, yeah. And you get to know that person
exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
and I think it's a great inlet to where, hey, that dude does comedy, and I watched his podcast. I know where he's coming from, so I'm prepared for whatever stupidness he has to say. You
yeah,
know?
I told you I came from a news background, and I didn't like this idea of people wearing this button-up tie and suit and giving pseudo-opinions, but you know, under this veil of, no, I'm right down the middle. I'm right down the middle. And what was alluring to me about podcasts is that you can put your biases out there. You can show who you are, and the audience can either accept it or not accept it, or if they don't like it, but they still might hate watch it, you know. Right. But at least they know where you're coming from,
mm-hmm.
and that was really attractive to me. And I still wanted to do something journalistic esque,
right?
In that there's so many fascinating people in South Louisiana, and the how the kind of the broadcast news works, or even print media, like you have like a word count in print, or you have a minute and a half to tell the whole story.
Right.
And I felt it wasn't long enough.
Right.
And I kind of went against the grain of, you know, this tiny attention span society that we now have.
It's everybody was based on headlines. That's mm-hmm. it. There's just a headline. And you can drive any narrative you want with a headline. I mean, and still tell the truth, but bend it. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Like you can add adjectives. You can be just like a car, two people got in a car wreck. Or you can be like, white guy runs into a black guy. Like you can really like play on people's emotions. And what I try to do on social media is to play on people's emotions enough to know that it's just a joke. It's like, I'm stirring the pot, y'all. Like, mm-hmm. don't take this serious, you know? Like, it's like my whole pasta lie a bit. I can't stand that shit. I just cannot stand it.
I think you're one of the reasons why people, without even forming an opinion of their own, they just shit on pasta live.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you just put it into the Louisiana zeitgeist.
Well, that's what, like, the whole pasta live thing was all a subliminal thing. It was always in the back of my mind. That shit's nasty. It's just nasty. And I never really had, like, a way to say that, you know? And I was like, okay, well, we got hit by the hurricane and 2 years ago, and I just had all kind of people, like, and God bless Lafayette, man. Y'all awesome. Y'all, Lafayette and Lake Charles, y'all reached out to Houma when we got hit by Ida, and y'all just flooded the love. Like, y'all just would come in with tons of stuff. But a lot of these cooking clubs were making pastelaya, which is, I mean, you know what? Hey, we in a dire situation here. We'll eat whatever
good.
We want. We'll eat whatever we want. So I was getting calls, and people were like, hey, Red, I'm with such and such church. We doing, you know, we cooking up 200 pounds of pasta lye, and we'd like to bring it to you. And I'm like, and this was before the pasta lye joke even came out. So I was like, okay, you know, like, bring it on over. And I didn't like pasta lye, but, you know, yeah, bring it to this church. We do it. Okay, cool. Boom. A week later, hey, Red, we got a cooking crew. We got 800 pounds of pasta lye. We bring it. I'm like, God, dog. Like, and I got to be nice. And I'm like, okay, they got a police station down the road that, you know, they feeding people over here. You go bring it over there. Another week later, it comes. Red, we got 1,000 pounds of pasta lye. And I said, they got a veterinarian office down the road. They got a bunch of dogs that might want to eat that stuff. You know? So I'm like, so that's where the joke came up. And then I just went on the side of the road. I was fishing, and I just turned my phone on, and I just went on a rant, like, just why I couldn't stand pasta lye. We in Rice Nation, bro. Like, that's Italian. That's not, no, man. You got to put rice in it. Red beans and rice. White beans and rice. Gumbo, you put rice in it. We grow rice over here. You know, it's just that's the way we are. And I think what happens is, and the joke, the whole joke is like, okay, Cajun culture is disappearing, right? Our coastal line is disappearing. If we do nothing about it, we're going to get infiltrated by non-Cajun people, coastal erosion, and pasta. You know what I'm saying? So we've said nothing, and we've allowed it in. So now I feel like I have to just put my hat on and say, no, you know, like, I draw the line. And so, and it's for some reason, it popped off, and people just, when somebody posts pasta lie or somebody posts, they tag me. And I'm like, it's brilliant, because when people think pasta lie, they think DJ Red for some reason. I don't know. And it's like, they're like, why you got your name associated with Pasta Lie? I said, I don't know, but it's great. It's great. Sure. You know? It's just awesome. I mean,
anyway, people can connect to you.
That's what a lot of politicians use. If you can use something that's ridiculous that relates you to that particular product, boom, use it. So
politicians, comedians, same thing.
It's the same thing, man.
Bunch of jokesters.
Just jokesters. Just a bunch of BS.
So talking about comedy, yeah, you've been doing stand-up for about a year now.
About a year.
You had some success with these videos popping off. I'm sure it helped you maybe sell tickets to, like, probably start doing DJing again. I don't know.
Well, I started DJing when I was 15 years old.
Right.
My family, I'm from Chauvin, Louisiana, which is like,
Jai, pull up a Louisiana map.
If you look at the map, Louisiana, I mean, it looks like a, I mean, that's one of my, that's one of my bits that I do in my comedy show. I take a actual trawl, like a shrimp boot,
mm-hmm.
and I show it, and I'm like, this is my map, because it looks just like Louisiana. And then I'll point out where we at on the map and everything. Terrebonne Parish is actually by the Big Toe. Like, so it's, so I call Terrebonne Parish the Big Toe. And there's a running joke in Houma and down there that we're from the swamp, so we have webbed toes. You know, that's just that, you know, over time, like Waterworld, we were like Kevin Costner. We grew the gills behind our ears. It's like we had webbed toes. That was the joke. And so I use that. So in Terrebonne Parish, we're the Big Toe, all right? So that's webbed feet, so you can remember that, all right? And then when you start making your way back this way, like New Iberia, okay, the whole famous ball haircut. So you see the Chaffalai Basin, that's the ball haircut. It comes right straight up. You can draw a line right through it, okay? And then if you pass Lafayette and you go toward Lake Charles, that's the hill, and you got to be hard as a rock because they up against freaking Texas over there, and they get hit with two or three hurricanes a year. You got to be strong.
So what is what about my stomping ground, St. Tammany? What are we?
Where St. Tammany is
the toe hair, right above the lake.
Oh, right above the lake. Oh, so no, y'all the river parishes, right? Y'all consider river
Florida parishes.
Okay, all right. Well, y'all still close enough to New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
Y'all closer to us than New Orleans. So what I say there is New Orleans, you know how they got that famous saying, you know, it our business stinks, but it's picking up, you know?
Yeah.
New Orleans River actually Parish disposal. Stinks because nobody picks up the trash over there. And the reason being is because when you go to those fairs and you walk in and you're eating like that, you'll have like some crawfish Monaco or some, you know, some anything good, and it falls right on top of your foot like that, and they don't pick it up. So that's why it stays all nasty in New Orleans, Orleans Parish. I call them the river rats. They got a lot of rats that eat right there.
Party gravy.
Oh, party gravy. It's full on top of the foot right there.
Oh, man. So you're doing stand-up for about a year, and you get a call from Cajun Comic Relief,
right,
to come be a part of the show. Had you heard of CCR beforehand?
I've seen some snippets of the show on YouTube. Mm-hmm. What's his name? Murray?
Murray Conk.
Yeah. I've seen him like a long time ago, like 20-something years ago.
Right.
And I think they might have called it something else. Or what was his name? Ralph? He did the Kjall joke. He always say Kjall. Brunard? I think that's his last name. Ralph Brunard or something?
I don't know. I've only been to one Cajun Comic Relief.
I'm young.
Just started getting involved.
Yeah. But anyway, it's so funny because Louisiana has its own brand of comedy. I mean, you got bayous, you got fishing, you got tourism, you got food, you got all kind of references that you can pull jokes and pull like experiences from. You can't do that anywhere else in the United States. So I think that's what the whole vibe of Louisiana and the ring to it and the, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's special down here, man. It's just special.
What I love about some of those older Cajun comics is it's these they're telling stories, but like the punchline is often like almost like a dad joke.
Yeah, yeah.
and it slaps you in the face because it's the thing you definitely, unlike other parts of comedy, it's something that you expect, but you expect the punchline so much that you don't see it coming.
No. That's like one of the jokes I tell, and I'll tell one of the jokes that I do my stand-up comedy.
Yeah, burn it.
It's one. So for my bachelor party, okay, I mean, I've been married for 20 years, okay? So, like I said, 46. So I got married when I was 25. This was 2003 when I got married. So this is pre-Usher Yeah, okay? The Usher Yeah didn't even come out. That came out in 2004, okay? So it's just to tell you the scene in New Orleans. That's where we went. So I got about six or seven of my guys. We all go into New Orleans, and the I mean, from home out when you're going, I don't know if you've ever passed and you stop at Frank's. Frank's has the best Bloody Marys ever. It's like a pre-stop to go to the Saints game, all right? So we stop over there on our way going to New Orleans, you know, because that's where our bachelor party
is. Is that on River Road?
It's on Old Highway 90.
Okay.
It's on the side. It's a little hole in the wall bar. It's Frank's best Bloody Marys ever, whatever. It's kind of like best cup of coffee.
I think
you know,
I've seen it going down 90.
Yeah. So we go in there and you get your Bloody Mary and everything. Well, they got this guy in there and he's he's got one leg, okay? And he's up there in crutches and he's doing karaoke, okay? So he's the karaoke guy and he's singing God Bless Texas by Little. I'll never forget it. We just dying laughing at this guy. And then the next song that comes on, he sings Indian Outlaw by Tim McGraw. And we just dying laughing. So we go to the hotel and we're like, y'all, we're going to get so cassé'd. Like, we're not going to remember what our room number is, all this stuff. So one of the guys I was with, he says, well, what floor are we on? He says 13. And he says, well, let's rhyme something with it. Eugene. Everybody's like, Eugene, remember Eugene 13. Okay, cool. So everybody's like, all right, cool. So if we get split up and we go to the hotel, whatever, we remember we're on the 13th floor. At least we got, okay, cool. So we all go. We go to Catch Me Out. We go to here. We get split up. One of us gets in a fight. One of us, I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning. We start off with about 10 people. We're down to about 3 left. Me, one of my best man, and one of my other partners, my brother. We walk into the hotel. One of my partners is in his face down. He's in the ashtray, okay? You know the little silver ashtray? He's in the lobby, and his face is in the ashtray. He gets it. We wake him up. He's got black soot all over because he's been breathing that cigarette soot in his thing. I said, dude, what are you doing down here? And he was like, I didn't know what the room was. And I was like, we said 13 Eugene. He says, well, shit, I got on the elevator, and I went, 13 Eugene, 14 Eugene, 15 Eugene, 16 Eugene. We started dying laughing. I was like, bro, that's a joke in itself right there, you know? So he slept in the lobby like this. So, I mean, it's just you got to find the jokes. And I think Louisiana just has a lot of those silly stories. Mm-hmm. And you can pull from that and make a joke out of it. And we tell stories so well, like – and I think it's our accent, too. Like, just, you know, like, man, that down-to-buy accent, I could listen to that all day long.
You'll never understand how much it pisses me off sometimes being from Covington and speaking clear and concise. Yeah. I want people to say, huh, every now and then.
How you talk? Like that, this? And I always say that, bro. The reason why we talk, like so flat is because we want to save our taste buds. We don't want to scratch them off. If we say this, that, other, we scrape our taste buds off. We got to say this, that, the other.
Yeah, it's not because you come from a culture of illiterate people.
No, we smart. We want to taste smart. Our good food. You know what I'm talking about?
So. I love that. Yeah, my mom's from, she's from even south, more south than you. She's from Port Sulphur.
Oh, way down there. Yeah, Venice, that area.
Really ain't they no more.
And then I tell you, I always refer to that Venice. They're way down there. And you can tell the difference between Houma people and Venice people is because their toenails are longer. Like, they can snatch a freaking speckled trout going upstream with those claws, you know,
I'll have to, Mom, whenever you watch or listen to this episode, write in the comments if that's true or not.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm telling you.
So I want to know, you've been all over with your comedy, doing appearances. Mm-hmm. I want to see DJ Rhett. I want to meet DJ Rhett. So you've traveled all across Louisiana at mm-hmm. this point, and whether that was before you blew up on social media or after or in between. Can you give me a few underrated towns in South Louisiana?
Let's see. I went to Walker, Louisiana.
Walker?
Yeah, Walker. Well,
I had a panic attack in Walker.
The biggest thing that happened in Walker since I went over there was the little girl who danced, and it was the Footloose story. Did y'all hear about that?
No.
So it went viral a couple of months ago. I did a comedy show over there, and it was like, there's nothing that happens over there in Walker. It's just like nothing. And then about 2 months later, there was this girl that she went to a homecoming dance, and she was dancing at an after party. And you know how kids are with the social media. They just post stuff or whatever. Well, they ended up posting the video, and she was behind one of her friends. Like, you know how kids are, to just get in the dance. And I mean, nothing really. I mean, yeah, whatever, but She was at a private party. It wasn't meant to be posted. When it got posted, the principal saw it. Mm. And she was like a straight-A student, class president, all this stuff. And he like took everything from her, scholarships, everything. And it blew up on social media.
Well, it is Footloose.
Yeah, it is. It's Footloose. It basically is. Well, the principal resigned. Walker High School, he resigned. Because he got so much social media backlash from it. Stating that, man, you never danced like that before. You know, like, that's just, I mean, it's even worse on music videos when you see, you know, the WAP and all of that stuff. Yeah. So she ended up getting everything reinstated. But the principal, I mean, that's the power of social media, though. But that was a cool little town. That was an underrated town because I went to the comedy over there and I'm like, bro, they are not going to get anything I'm saying because it almost Walker, Louisiana is almost like Arkansas.
Right.
I mean, once you get on the other side of North I-10, mm-hmm. it's a different, it really is a different world. You know? And it's still Louisiana, but it ain't down the bayou, you know, or Lafayette or Lake Charles or, you know, the bayou parish.
Yeah, my New Orleans friends, they refer to where I'm from, Covington, as Mississippi. Mm-hmm. But Covington really is just people who were sick and tired of New Orleans' bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, man, I'm getting out of here. Yeah. I mean, I like y'all enough to stay by y'all, but I can't be next to y'all.
Yeah, so but now, like, that culture is still alive, and so they're kind of resurrecting some of these. Like, they have, like, a blue dress run now in Covington.
Oh, so the opposite of the red dress?
Yeah. Right.
That's hilarious. That's funny.
And the Mardi Gras has grown. My dad was telling me last year, they're like, dude, you should come back to Covington, like, for Mardi Gras Day. Like, it used to just be, like, the Lions Club would just, like, come through with, like, Covington High. And then
I've actually seen some nice parades on social media roll through Covington, Mandeville.
Yeah, yeah. I grew up going to, like, Eve and Orpheus in Mandeville. And
oh, yeah.
Those are always pretty big
parades. Yeah, when you go to a New Orleans parade and you go somewhere else, you're like,
Right. For sure.
But
that's how I was when I moved to Lafayette for the first time. I was like, but then I came to love it because like, oh, it's, you have to deal with all the fucking
the drama,
yeah, the shootings, getting robbed,
it's
the
crazy
hustles.
We used to go to New Orleans all the time, my wife and I. We went to college right around that time. I mean, I grew up when I was born in 77, so I grew up in the 80s and mm-hmm. 90s. I went to college in the late 90s, so we used to always go to New Orleans for Mardi Gras. And I remember I think it was 89, we went, and we were all in college having a good time, whatever. And I mean, you got those kids with the little tap, you know. Mm-hmm. So they had this little black kid, his name was Derek. And man, thought he was the cutest. They 5 years old, right? He's like, that, he's getting it. So I gave him a $20 bill. I was like, hey, man, you know, like, here's a tip. And he's like, oh, man, thank you. Well, then the next year we went and we're just walking down the street and I see him. I told my wife, I was like, look, that's Derek. Oh, that's not Derek. And we walk up to it because we took a picture with him. And I said, Derek. And he looked at me and he went, the rich white man. That's what he said. He said, the rich white man, because I gave him 20 bucks. So I gave him another 20 bucks. So we took a picture with him. Well, it almost became like we have to do it every year now. So I have like a span of my little New Orleans tap dance kid, Derek. Like, we have 16 pictures with him.
That's
like
awesome.
Growing up, you know, and then I kind of lost touch with him kind of after it was Katrina. Yeah.
Well, there's you know, talk about content creators like yourself. There's a new guy that I've seen recently all around New Orleans. He's got kind of real raspy voice. It's like, if you go down to the corner at this time, expect this. And
I haven't seen that yet.
You never see his face.
Oh, okay.
It's always a voiceover. But he did one recently about New Orleans, like Mardi Gras, like hustles, like street hustlers, like the people who were like, well, tell you, like, I bet I can guess where you get your shoes from.
Yeah.
Or people who come and just like give you beads and put it over your head and like, all right, $20. Like, what? No, take this.
Yeah, get it off.
But
man,
like, there's like sweet tourists who come and they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
like,
here you go. I can't stand you walking down the street and they're like, hey man, I got to give you a ticket. I'm like, for what? For not partying hard enough. Dude, get out of here. Like, shut up.
You know it's got to work on some people.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, dude. It's actually, one time they had a guy that came up to me, and he was like, we went to a Madonna concert in New Orleans, okay? Anyway, we go there, and I'm walking with my friend. We walk into the hotel because my wife forgot something, and this guy pulls up, and he's like, hey, man, traveling salesman from Pennsylvania. I forgot my wallet at the, you know, that get a couple of bucks. My buddy pulls out. Oh, he's believable. Bro, he's but no, man, he's in trouble, man. They give him 20 bucks. Oh, thanks, man. God bless y'all, man. And he was in a suit, and I mean, he looked legit. And I'm like, no. He got you. About a month later, I mean, we always bring our kids to, we like to see the lights and everything for Christmas. So
yeah, celebration in the Oaks for Christmas. Yeah.
So we go out
Christmas
there.
In the Oaks.
Yeah. So we go out there and we down Fulton Street, I think mm-hmm. it is. And they got the fake snow or whatever. And we walk in. My kids are tired, whatever. My wife's carrying one. I'm carrying the other. We walk in. Freaking same dude, bro, pulls up. Hey, man. And I was like, you're a traveling salesman from the Eagles. He says, have a good night. He took off. So I was like, oh, I got to stick it to him. And I took a picture real quick, and I sent it to my friend. I said, that's the same dude. He asked for the 20 bucks. So, yeah, you got to watch yourself in New Orleans, bro. They slick.
Yeah, they are. That.
They some good actors.
There's a giant industry that comes out every single.
Oh, they make over 100 grand easy a year doing that stuff. You know, cash money.
Okay. Good luck, Uncle Sam.
About to go do that. If I wasn't recognizable, then man, that's DJ Reddy's poor.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, man, I need $100, bro. Help me out. I need to write some more jokes.
That would be a fun video to see if you can get away with hustling money.
Hide somebody in the bush with the camera, and I'm just like. Because you know, we'll work for jokes or something like we'll work for Cajun food. Oh, bro, help me.
Well, have you ever? I mean, you've done like every sort of content there is. Mm-hmm. The first one was just the We Are the World video, right?
Yeah, yeah, that was the face swap.
Yeah, just a face swap.
Face swap was like so popular back then,
right?
You know, people were face swapping with babies, mm-hmm. and it was just a weird look. And
but have you gotten into doing any like MOS, like man on the street type interviews?
Mm-hmm. No, I mean I've done some stuff like that before, and it's just. People are crazy, man.
Right.
I don't want to go up to somebody and say, hey, man, you want to do the interview?
Like, yeah, like,
you
know. Like the people who do like Bourbon Street Confessions.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know how they do that. Like, it's like you'll get somebody and they're like, yeah, we do that. And it's like they go so wild. It's like, give me my microphone back.
Right, yeah. But every now and then you can catch a person like a Popeye.
And oh, yeah. And it golden, viral.
Whatever happened to Popeye?
I think he's in jail.
No shit, huh?
I think he sold too many glow sticks.
Got all kind of shit. Got the glow sticks. I got the gotcha bag. Got the Hawaiian punch. That man, everybody won't holler at Pop. What you need? I got it. If I ain't got it, I'll find it. You understand?
No, just going back to the comedy thing. I actually fell into it like the stand-up comedy thing. Somebody called me mm-hmm. and said, hey, Rhett, we want you to do some stand-up comedy for us. This was last year. It's a crew of Ambrosia from Thibodeau. They were doing a fundraiser to try to drum up money for the crew. And they said, do you do stand-up comedy? I said, no. And they said, you want to? And I was like, oh, why not? Let's try it. And I went in there, did an hour and a half of stand-up comedy.
Good Lord.
I didn't know what I was going to say, didn't know what I was going to do. I was like, okay, I've DJed before. I've sung in a band before. I'm not shy getting in front of people. That doesn't bother me. But what the hell am I going to say? So...
You just black out and talk for an hour?
Well, that pretty much. Like, so I have the meat and potatoes of what I want to say,
mm-hmm.
but it's almost like I'm putting a puzzle together, reacting to how the crowds react. It's a weird thing.
So you didn't try hitting like any like little open mics before going up and
no,
doing that? You
just, no,
like,
I just did it. Yeah, I said, you know what? I'm either gonna shit the bed or I'm gonna hit it.
How'd
and
you do?
I did great, man. I was like, I went up there and everybody was laughing. I did a bit. I mean, I'm getting older, so I have to do right around that time, I was asked to do a colonoscopy because I'm getting right around that age, and I'm like, ah. So I was like, well, can I do that other thing, the commercial where Cologuard, where you just pretty much shit in a box and send it to them? And they're like, yeah, you can do that. So I got a whole comedy bit about that because... You know, as us Cajuns, when we are in the woods or when we in, you know, on a fishing boat or wherever, when you got to go, you got to go. And we just hang it over the side and do it, you know. But when you got to when you actually have to do it in a box for medical reasons, it's a whole other realm, okay? Like, you got to prep it. And it's like gumbo, bro. You're playing with your shit. It's like, it's crazy.
So ugh,
I got a whole bit on that. Yeah. And people just, they were like dying because they're all my same age and they're going through it too. Mm-hmm. You know, like, okay, do I make the decision? Do I shit in the bucket or do I get the hose? And I'm like, I'm recommending it now. Get the hose up your ass. I'm just telling y'all right now. drink that stuff, get your colon cleaned out, and go just get anesthesia. You'll be all right.
You'll be all right.
Don't do what I did because you're tortured for life. You actually have to play with your stuff.
You can't unsee
it. It's like
it.
Play-Doh, bro. And we Cajuns, bro, so we eat some weird stuff.
Yeah. That's
that's what I'm saying.
It's not a fibrous poop.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like who applies for these jobs? You know, like I'm gonna open the box. You know, like right. The box opener. Like what did it?
That shit detail.
Yeah, like do you get a college degree for that? Like you know, like do you like? All right, I'm the turd tester. You know, like. I'm like, I don't know. I was
be a hell of a thing to put in your resume.
They gotta pay $150,000 for that because I mean, that ain't $30,000. You ain't making me do that.
That ain't $150,000 a year job, brother. I'm telling you that right now. When was the first time you bombed?
I honestly never bombed. I think.
Now answer me this honestly. Do you think the reason you haven't bombed, outside of you being a hilarious person and you work hard at your craft? Do you think
I haven't done it enough to have a bomb yet?
I was gonna
probably
say, like,
did. I probably did maybe about 10 to 15 stand up.
Well, I was
shows.
Gonna say you had this kind of like pseudo celebrity thing where people were just excited to see you and they're more willing to laugh at maybe a poor joke.
Right. Well, like I did the second time I did a comedy show was at a distiller company in Houma. They do like an open mic type thing. It's Bayou Terrebonne Distillers. Mm. They make their own corn whiskey. And every third Friday of the month, they did a comedy show. And they said, Rhett, you want to host it one day? Just kind of like what comic? Like, yeah. Can I do it? Can I just go up there and do it? Yeah, you can do it. So we had some comics come in from New Orleans. And they went up there and they did good. And then I went up there and I mean they had some people that did, they know what I'm about. So I guess that kind of helps. Mm-hmm. I've been on social media for 20 years, so it's like 2004 MySpace is when I started. So it's like people kind of expect and they know what to expect. So it's kind of an easy warm handoff.
Now,
have I been in locations where I'm like it's hard like to get a reaction? Yes. Like down here in Houma, down here in Louisiana, there's really no like comedy venues where there's a stage, people sit down with tables and watch.
Right.
There's bars. And if you ever been in a bar in Louisiana, it's basically the bar, pool tables, and a couple of just stand up, bar stools.
Maybe a little stage in the corner.
Right. No stage, you know, it's just a table. So I would set up and do comedy in like daiquiri shops and stuff like that. And it's very hard to get the attention of everybody because people are doing their own things. Mm-hmm. Like people are playing pool, people are drinking at the bar, some people are there
to listen.
They're
not buying a ticket to see
me. They're not buying a ticket to see me. So that in itself is weird because it's hard. I wouldn't say it's bombing. I would just say you're trying to compete with the jukebox, you're trying to compete with everything right. else, you know? So that's why I like, you know, the Cajun Comic Relief. It's like you're going there to enjoy a comedy show. They know what they're going there for. A lot of people, when they go to a bar, they think they're going there to just have a drink. Oh, by the way, DJ Rhett's playing here tonight. Oh, who's that? He's a comedian and a DJ. And then they just sit there and they half-ass listen and they don't. And you got chatter going on. And it's just, it's not, you can't get intimate with the crowd. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that would be my only beef with Louisiana comedy scenes. It's like, well, it's hard. Yeah. There's no venues for it.
Yeah, I've heard like Mark Norman talk about it before. One of the best stand-ups right now in the game.
Ah, yeah.
Comedy.
Comedy.
But yeah. he was talking about like, you know, growing up in New Orleans and having to move to New York because there is no comedy clubs because you're competing.
Right.
You're competing with all the other cultural things that we have down here.
Exactly.
Festivals. Crawfish Bowls,
there's
you know,
all
Saints
kind of
games,
Pelicans,
yeah,
you
know, whatever it is.
There's so much entertainment down here that you
LSU,
know, something like you know Austin, Texas, who they're blowing up on the comedy scene. There's nothing there, so it's like okay, cool, let's house that, and it's a new brand of comedy too. It's more like I don't want to say raunch, but it's more like reality comedy. I don't know. It's weird. It's not like skit comedy anymore. It's really like. People tell it like it is from their wicked and dark point of view, and I don't know what it is. I love that stuff. I just love hearing
you're not the only one.
Different,
it's blowing up.
Yeah, I just love hearing that stuff.
Well, I would love to see, you know, I know, I'm sure eventually you're going to get there, but go out of Louisiana, do like an Austin, and see how much you keep some of like the local Louisiana flavor,
right?
With, you know, what we all as humans, you know, the human condition kind of stuff we deal with,
right?
Societal.
Right. I mean, it's hard. It's like next week, next Thursday night, I'm going to be at the in Biloxi, which is kind of still Louisiana, you know, but that's the furthest I'm going. So I'm going to try to drop some of my stuff over there and see what happens. And the only way you're going to perfect your art is to go out there and do it. Yeah. I mean, football players practice for a reason. Everybody practices guitar for a reason. Everybody, you know, what y'all practice here. It looks like y'all studio practicing here to get better. Mm-hmm. And the only way you're going to get better at stand-up comedy is to get in front of people and do it. You're going to bomb. You're going to say a joke that you think's funny. Nobody else thinks funny, you know. And you learn and you pull from all of that stuff. And I think I've just done that over the years. It's just a knack. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, do you get nervous when you go on stage? I've DJ'd and I've sung in bands enough to that doesn't bother me. The only nervousness I get is like when I'm starting to talk and I'm like, okay, I'm building up the joke. I'm building up. I know it's coming down. Boom. And then like if nobody laughs, it's like, oh, shit. Like, okay, what am I going to do? You know, and that happens every now and again. But, you know, it's just like I look at it this way. Wrestling. You ever watch wrestling on TV?
Sure.
It looks real as hell. You ever watched it in real life? Looks fake as hell.
Really?
In real life,
It's the angles?
Oh, my God. Angles? It's the camera angles, and it's the sound. It's the audio. It's the music. It's the glitz, the glamour. You feel like they're actually fighting. When you go to the arena and you watch, you're like, this looks like pillow fighting. Like, it's horrible. It looks so bad. I want to say 97, I went to see The Road to WrestleMania. It was The Rock. And tagging up with Kane.
Oh.
And it was Mankind with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And they wrestled, and I'm like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, it looks so fake. And it's the same way. It's like in comedy, you just brush it off because, like, if they didn't laugh, it wasn't real. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so you just move on. You just go on. Same thing with wrestling. If a clothesline didn't look that real, you just move on. You can't stop and say, oh, I meant to do this. You can't. You just got to keep on going with the motion. And I think the more and more you practice it with anything, welding, cooking, whatever, you're going to get better at it. So, like I said, I'm new at it. I haven't officially bombed, but I know it's coming. I'm not naive to think it will.
It seems like you're falling in love with the art form and really enjoying it. So
I'm excited
to see where you go, man.
Like I said, this is just the beginning. So.
Yeah. Well, we're getting close to wrapping up here. I could talk to you literally all day.
No, me too. I could talk all day long.
Got to get you out of here.
Yeah.
Just real quick, you said Stone Cold. You want to know how I graduated college?
How's that? Through wrestling?
Yeah. So we I graduated in broadcasting.
Where you graduated at?
UL.
UL? Okay. Mm-hmm. What year?
December of 17.
Oh, you youngin. Mm-hmm. I graduated 2000 from Nicholls State University in Tulsa.
All right.
With media. I have a media. Well, marketing. So.
Okay. Well, they had to have like a capstone final course. Mm-hmm. And with that was a one project that you work on all semester. And all the other, there's like a couple of groups. And they're all working on these like, you know, really passionate documentaries about, you know, race issues or, you know, or income issues in Louisiana, you know, real serious stuff. I made a mockumentary about a guy who was addicted to stone colding beers over his head, and he had to have his friends have an intervention for him. It was called it was called Stone Cold Intervention. And my buddy, who was the star of it, I don't think he's touched Coors Light since, because
really?
He just, with so many takes of him smashing beers and trying to just gargle. I was like, Zach, I didn't get it that time. Do it again. He had like a little PTSD from the amount of beers I made this dude drink. I mean, he got free beer out of it.
That's hilarious. Hilarious.
That's the bar to graduate from UL.
I did that Stone Cold to, it was a parody. Well, actually, it was a funny joke. after the hurricane hit, you got all kind of roofers that come in from out of town and say, I could fix your roof. I can fix your roof. And they screw everybody. So I was pissed. And so I made a TikTok with the Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, the moves. And I was like, if the next roofer that comes into this town, you're going to hear this. And I walked out. I grabbed the beer. And I'm like, you know, like, don't come in this town and start doing this stuff. But, yeah, those were the days, the era.
Yeah, the
attitude
the
era.
Attitude era.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you call yourself Cajun. You are Cajun.
More down the ball, I guess.
Sure. But
we all Cajun to some degree.
Yeah, we just had Barry Onsley on, like I said. But do you ever get discouraged that Lafayette or Acadiana kind of holds on to that Cajun moniker more and kind of excludes? I make
fun of that.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, I poke fun of that because one of the things that I do is I refer to the map where Lafayette is. Lafayette is on the ankle, okay? You have all kind of problems with the ankle, okay?
Oh, I know I do.
You can twist your ankle, you can roll it, you can sprain it. You got all of this stuff going on, and you want to know why Lafayette, they get so butt hurt when somebody from, you know, from Houma says, "I'm Cajun," or somebody from Lafayette says, Lake Charles says, "I'm Cajun." It's because y'all are halfway north of I-10 and halfway south of I-10. The sock line, which I call I-10, runs right through Lafayette. So no wonder y'all in a bad mood, you know? Half of y'all are north of I-10, you know? And it's like, y'all, you know, and that's why I always say, I said, you always get butt hurt because y'all on the ankle, it rolls. They always got problems with
that. So on that, do you put tomatoes in your gumbo?
No, I don't do that. That's actually a Creole thing.
Right.
Like, and I bring that up in my comedy event too, not to give to, I got tons of stuff, don't worry, but there's three ways to make gumbo. There's a Creole style, a Cajun style, and a New Orleans style. Basically simple. Creole is okra and tomatoes. The reason why they put tomatoes in it is because they got that lichen or some, it breaks down the slime of the okra, okay? So that's a Creole thing. Cajun is just a onion roux. It's supposed to be just an onion roux, no flour. The flour is a New Orleans thing. They thickened it up. It's more hearty, more presentable. If you look at a real down the bayou gumbo, it looks like soup. It really looks like soup because that's what it's meant to be. A gumbo with flour in it is a stew. We just call it a stew. It's pretty much a stew because thickening it up. And then a Creole one is they got the tomatoes in it. So the whole, like, you put tomatoes in your gumbo, Cajun, that's a Creole thing. So that's where the joke comes from. So, but a lot of people, you know, and then dirty rice dressing. That's another one that you could just blow people's mind.
Don't forget, though, that Cajun is a subsidiary of Creole.
Yes, it is. It is.
But, you know, I was talking with Barry this, I keep bringing him up, but like there's these terms that were like older, but they've been formed a different, but like we're using the same term for two different things.
Look, I'm one of the things in 2004 I said as one of my resolutions, I'm going to learn Cajun French fluently, and I'm digging in deep to these books. It's crazy cuz it's all different, no matter where you're from. If you're from Vermilion Parish, you talk different than Houma. You talk different than Venice, Port Salfa. It's all their own. It's pretty much, you want to know what Cajun is? It's Ebonics French. That's exactly what it is. We just put our flavor in it. That's it, you know? Sha. You know, like over here, I think they say Galafad more than we say that. We say, oh, mon Dieu, where we from. It's the different things. It's just, it's all part of the culture. And then I think it's just funny how we all just say, no, that's Cajun, that's this, that's French, that's this. We're a melting pot of all kinds of different things. If you go back in history and look at where we come from, Nova Scotia, Canada, we're pretty much a melting pot.
Yeah, I mean, a culture isolated.
German. Everything you can think of is over here in Louisiana. And I think that's why we learned how to have fun because it's like we all mixed up together. You know what I'm saying? And it's good. It's like a big rainbow, you know? We just all go good together, you know? It's just all happy, you know? Maybe not the rainbow, but, you know.
Yeah, Yeah, that's a different thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's been co-opted.
Yeah.
So, Cajun Comic Relief, we got two shows on Saturday, March 9th. Excited for you to be a part of it.
2 o'clock and 7 o'clock.
Yep. And afterwards, and we don't want to get into much of the details on it just now before we really flesh them out.
Party!
There's going to be a party
at
the Grouse Room that you're essentially hosting.
Yep. VIP.
Can you tell me the difference in between your set that's going to be a Cajun Comic Relief and the set that's going to be at this party?
So Cajun Comic Relief is more like it's comedy, stand-up comedy. It's jokes. It's storytelling, basically how I came up the ranks, why I think things are funny and things are not. My little spin on life through the eyes of a down the bayou boy. That's it. Who came up the ranks DJing, listening to music, and then just, it's weird because all my parodies just come from that. It's like, it's just my experience down the bayou and in me DJing over the years, knowing these good popular songs and saying, you know what? When I was in school, in high school, I used to take songs and I used to learn my multiplication or my chemistry, putting it to beats, you know, Return of the Square, you know, just something like that. I don't know, MC Square or something like that. I would say stuff like that to remember it, and that's how I would study. So I'm like using that again to do my parodies and stuff like that. So, I mean, like I said, I got Couillon, Free Fall, and I just did Gotta Get Bait. It's Faith by George Michael and Limp Bizkit, but it's like I Gotta Get Bait.
That's so silly.
Oh, yeah. It's just ridiculous stuff. And I think that's what comedy is. Yeah. You just take two opposite ends of the spectrum, something like the song George Michael, Faith, and something we do down here, We Gotta Get Bait when we go fishing, you put that together, and, well, you gotta get bait, bait, bait. You know, just, it's silly. But people are like, they can relate to it. You know what I'm saying?
So CCR is going to be more about kind of like that upbringing.
It's going to be that, and then a couple of, you know, like I said, I got jokes. I got all kind of stuff, storytelling, kind of like Shane Gillis, the way he does. I mean, he's way good, but I'm just talking about like just talking and, you know, and then I got a couple of parodies that I throw in, like, you know, toward the end. I do my little Coquetry Girl skit. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Mm-mm. It's my little spin on... you know, Disney's going woke, you know. I'm like, I just don't want Disney to go woke. You don't have to go woke. Down here in Louisiana, we're a melting pot. We got a little bit of everything, right? So hire a Cajun. So I do my little, it's called Coquetry Girl instead of Part of This World. You know?
and then what is the after party vibe going to be like?
After party vibe is just basically DJing, having a good time. I mean, it's not even going to be me singing or anything. I'm like, I'm old school 90s, 2000 type, you know, like, let's just get down and party, you know, Return of the Mac, this how we do it, you know, stuff like that. I love the DJ scene, how it used to be. It's not like it is now. I mean, you go in a club now, everybody's on their phone and they got three people there, you know, because it's so easy to swipe left, swipe up, swipe right, and get a chick, you know. Back when I was growing up, you had to go in a club and you had to... Hey baby, you had to work for it, you know. Now you just swipe left. Oh, you look good. You want it? Okay, yeah. Here we go.
West Bank bitches. Ooh.
I'm turning 30 in March, but I knew I was starting to get a little too old to go to the clubs in Lafayette. Whenever I'm, you know, talking with these girls, and then some younger guy comes up and goes, "Hey girl, can I get your Snapchat?"
Yeah, yeah. Can I get your snap? Okay, thanks, man. I walk away. I was like,
does that work?
That's your game?
Well, if a bitch is bad enough, I'd just be like, you know what I'm
saying? Oh, I wouldn't make it now.
These poor girls.
Mom, I'm so glad I'm married. I wouldn't make it now.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's tough out here in these streets. Well, man, I appreciate you coming on the show.
No problem, man. I talk a lot, you know. Sorry.
Well, I saw
that's what podcasts is.
Yeah, more the merrier. Real quick, do you have, off the top of your dome, a Mount Rushmore of Louisiana musicians?
Wayne Tubes.
All right.
Don Rich. Keith Frank. And the 4-H tradition. Anybody from the 4-H, like Ryan, Tinana. That's Tinana and all of them. 4-H tradition. Yeah. Ryan 4-H. Yeah.
Ryan 4-H. All right.
Ryan 4-H, Don Rich, Wayne Toops, and Keith Frank.
You putting Ryan before Warren?
Warren? Storm? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
King of Swamp Pop.
I know, but I don't know. I'm more of a... I like them, but I'm more of that energetic, like, you know, just kind of.
Enough said.
You know, but yeah, you put me on the spot there, but that's my four. Yeah, okay. I'll stick with that.
All right. Well, as we end every episode, we let our guest to give a personal message to their single cam right there. It could be a word, a phrase, could be advice, could be a song lyric, could be anything that you want to impart the Acadiana world and the internet land as a whole to end this episode with. The floor is yours.
Puck Fosta Lawyer.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the show. Since you made it this far, might as well give us a like, a follow, a subscribe. You know, whatever you got to do to alert you that there's a new episode out. Look, it helps us grow, and it allows us to give you the content that, well, you deserve. If you want to be a sponsor, if you want to be a guest, if you just want to berate me, hey, all goes to the same place. info@acadianacast.com. Email info@acadianacast.com. And for more locally sourced podcasts, go to acadianacast.com. Bye.